Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is July 2nd, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's episode is War Inevitable? Now, this is something we have been discussing here as of late, kind of just throwing it in the midst of our daily discussions here, particularly around Iran, a lot of the saber rattling that is taking place there. In the month of May, we had 4 oil tankers that were struck. Last month, we had 2 additional oil tankers struck, one of them being a Japanese tanker. At the same time that Prime Minister Shinzo Abe of Japan was in Tehran, pretty much on a diplomatic mission at the request of President Trump to sort of be the middleman to get Tehran back to the negotiating table with Washington, D.C. Now, obviously, that went awry, because there was an attack on a Japanese tanker while the Japanese prime minister was in Tehran. Okay, you can't make this stuff up. That's what happened. The Iranians shoot down a U.S. drone. Okay, $100 million piece of equipment gone, shattered. All right, they claim we flew over their airspace. We claim we were flying in international airspace. Okay, he said. Who do you believe? Okay, we can go down that rabbit hole. We're not going to do that. This is what we know. Donald Trump was supposedly going to respond. He asked his generals, okay, how many people might get killed? 150 is the answer that we're being told. He said it's not proportional. I applaud the president on his restraint on using that force, that power. He upped the sanctions on the Iranian people, specifically targeting the Iranian regime. They didn't like it. They called President Trump and his administration, the White House, mentally challenged. President Trump didn't like that. He fires back, and back and forth we go. Now we have the Iranians breaking the Iran deal. Of course, the United States pretty much ripped that up. Many of the nations of Europe still believe in it and want to hold true to it. But now the Iranians are breaching the Iran deal and are continuing with their nuclear program. They have exceeded the fuel limits, the uranium fuel limits that were established in that deal. You then have President Trump, obviously aware of this, being asked by reporters, what's your take on this, Mr. President? The Iranians are playing with fire. Okay, so the rhetoric continues. It's this strongman rhetoric from both sides. Again, a global game of poker with a lot of quote-unquote strong men. Who has a pocket pair? Who's bluffing? I mean, we're going to find out here sooner or later. But one of the reasons why today's episode is titled Is War Inevitable? Is because despite yesterday's podcast, where we applaud President Trump and his efforts to reach across the Great Divide with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, where over the weekend President Trump made an historic visit to North Korea, being the first sitting U.S. president to step foot in North Korea, crossing the DMZ. It's a great photo op. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The question remains, what is going to come of this? We hope here at the Capital News that it's peace and prosperity. I don't know if any of you have ever seen the picture at night, basically a satellite image, of North Korea against South Korea. South Korea, you have this huge area that is just lit up because of all the lights, all of the life taking place in the cities. And on the other side, in North Korea, it's pitch black. Which ironically leads to an interesting question. How do the Democrats feel about that? Would they rather us be pitch black, like the North Koreans at night, or like the South Koreans? Because, I mean, all of this global warming and all of this climate change, we're just going to kill each other, ourselves, in a matter of 12 years. We're going to be wiped off the face of the planet. So maybe the Democrats, I mean, that's a serious question, too. That should be asked in one of these debates. President Trump is meeting with North Korea, but have all of you seen this picture? And they can have it up there in whatever auditorium they're in. They can say, here's a picture, here's a global satellite picture of South Korea at night versus North Korea. Should we emulate the North Koreans? Because they're saving energy. I mean, that's a serious question. But nevertheless, We applaud President Trump and his efforts to reach across the Great Divide. And hopefully peace and prosperity can come to the entire Korean peninsula, not just in the southern half. That remains to be seen. But right now, some of that rhetoric is toned down. There seems to be good rapport between these two leaders. We'll see what comes of it, but we are praying for success here. We are praying for peace and prosperity, and we wish the president well on this. I have some serious concerns, as I have stated here many times before, with Iran. This is a different story. Iran has oil. Iran has natural gas. That is a prized possession to the military-industrial complex. We've been in Iraq. Now, Afghanistan doesn't have oil and gas, but they have some other rare earth minerals that we're not informed about. You got to sort of do your own research on that, find out what type of rare earth minerals are there. Very prosperous with the poppy fields. And of course, poppy is used to make opium, which is used to make heroin. We're not supposed to talk about that, by the way. The world's most powerful militaries in the world. We have a drug crisis in this country, but we're not supposed to look there. We're not supposed to talk about that. Look that up. Is war inevitable? I believe in a previous podcast some time ago, I took the time to read a couple paragraphs from our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, because one of those chapters is titled War, What Is It Good For? We'll tell you. And we go through this chapter. It's a brief chapter relative to the others, just highlighting the business of war, the military-industrial complex. That's not my lingo. That's not tinfoil hat lingo. That's not conspiratorial lingo. The military-industrial complex was given to us, that verbiage was given to us, by President Eisenhower, who was a five-star general. He warned the American people during his farewell address of the power that exists and will persist, basically talking about power behind the curtain. And he called it out by name, the military-industrial complex, and that's exactly what it is. We unfortunately also have political parties, both sides, that actually seem to like war. Because I guess these politicians perhaps are maybe profiting themselves. They send your children to go fight them, and then what happens, happens. My biggest concern right now is the fact that we have a slowing global economy. What that means is the price of oil is likely to go down, which it has been. Last year, oil prices tanked, as did the stock market. They rebounded pretty aggressively at the beginning of the year and through the first quarter of the year, as did the stock market. They have started to roll over. I always talk specifically on the economic podcast, there are really four things you have to pay attention to at a high level when it comes to the price of oil. Supply and demand, the strength of the dollar, the U.S. dollar, because that's what it's traded in, and geopolitical events. Well, the supply-demand function of this, to me, on my analysis, points to prices going lower. The global economy is slowing down. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it as far as I'm concerned. We have supply that continues to reach this market. We have the United States pumping it out like it's going out of style, despite the fact that we have cuts, production cuts from OPEC and Russia, and then we just talked about this yesterday, that they are going to extend those production cuts. Oil continues to really sell off, and we're going to talk about that further in today's economic podcast. But when you understand the Middle East, and when you understand that these major exporting nations that comprise OPEC, particularly Qatar, particularly Saudi Arabia, they need oil to be at a certain price for their government, for their countries to function at a decent level. If oil is too low for too long, they're in a lot of trouble. They want higher prices. That's why they are attempting production cuts. But as the United States and other countries around the world become more technologically savvy, discover new oil fields, and are able to tap it economically, This is making OPEC less and less effective. So despite the fact that you have OPEC and Russia coming together, saying we are going to continue with these production cuts, the market still sold off today. Why? Because they're looking at the function of supply and demand. And it ain't pretty, folks. It's not pretty. So now you have all this saber rattling in the Middle East, in Iran. Iran and Saudi Arabia are not best buddies by any stretch of the imagination. Israel is a next-door neighbor. They're no fans of the Iranians. Donald Trump and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, they seem to be buddy-buddy. We'll see what transpires from this. We will, but this is what gives me great concern, because we've had these oil tanker attacks over the past couple of months. What is likely to transpire, especially if the price of oil continues to fall? Because at one point today, as I was watching some of the market news, oil, I believe, was down about 5% at its low point today. 5%, that's a huge move for the price of oil. If that continues, I imagine there's going to be some sort of event that takes place, meaning a geopolitical event that can get the price of oil back up. Because we now know, based off of the rhetoric between the Iranians and the response from President Trump, that if anything American, anything, not anybody, but anything American is interfered with or is struck or attacked or any of this, that, or the other, Iran might be obliterated. That's the president's words. That was our podcast title, Obliteration and Mentally Challenged. Because the Iranians called the president mentally challenged, and the president says you're going to be obliterated if you do anything to anything American. Is he bluffing? Is he serious? This is a high-stakes game of poker. I honestly believe the president wants peace, not war, but he has a lot of war hawks in his cabinet sitting around the table advising him. I'm sure he has people on the other side. But nevertheless, who's going to win out? And God forbid there actually be another attack on something or anything or anybody American, and the president is going to have to act. Because we have seen this strongman rhetoric. I have stated it here many times before. If you are going to threaten to break somebody's legs and they cross that red line, you got to break their legs. If you weren't ready to do so, then you shouldn't have threatened them. So God forbid the Iranians escalate this further, strike something or somebody American, the president's going to have to act. He's going to have to, because the rest of the world is just going to say, this guy's a joke. He's all talk. He's all talk. He's all hat and no cattle, as they say in Texas. Love that saying, by the way. Because I'm not going to go off on a tangent here, but we've talked about the U.S.-China trade truce now that we're in. President Xi got the better of this. He's sitting back, twiddling his thumbs. There's no deadline. I don't have to worry about a thing. Yeah, there's some tariffs. Yeah, some companies are leaving China. We already knew about it. There's a long road ahead. They're not going to slap more tariffs on us. We're not going to slap more tariffs on the U.S. No big deal. We'll continue to talk. Maybe we'll come out and make some contradictory statements like we have been predicting, which have been taking place a little bit here over the past couple of days. I again hope the president, President Donald Trump, is successful. But even today, the president was talking about, well, if a deal is made, and again, I'm in no hurry, but it has to be the right deal, it has to be the best deal, and it has to be tilted in the favor of the United States. China's been ripping us off, so we're not going to let them rip us off for so many years and then just say, okay, we're just going to come 50-50. No, no, we have to get the better of it, which is going to make it even more difficult, I would think, for China to come across the table and say, well, you know what, we have been ripping you off for 20 years. I guess you're allowed to rip us off for the next 20 years. Let's just call it 2040, and then we'll get back together. Our grandkids will get back together, and they can negotiate the next deal where we'll just be even Steven from here on in. I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't think that's going to happen. But one of the things, one of the paragraphs that I read to you guys, I don't have it in front of me now, but I'm going to paraphrase it. In regards to our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, when we were talking about war and the military-industrial complex. At the time, this book was published in 2015. So our data was probably back, depending on the data point, it was either 2013 or 2014 data point. And according to then Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I believe it was Admiral Mike Mullen. Of course, this was under the Obama administration. He said, the number one national security threat facing the United States is our national debt. Our national debt. Not Al-Qaeda. Not the Russians. Not some other terrorist group. Not the Chinese. Not nuclear proliferation. Not climate change. Our national debt. So let's just assume that this data point was 5 years ago. 2014 data point, let's say. We're at $22 trillion now. 23, so we're talking 16, 17, 18 trillion, wherever you want to take your rounding to. Now it's at $22 trillion and counting. If it was the national security threat that we all should have been worried about 5 years ago, how concerned should we be today? Because we know, by admission of the Trump administration itself, that there are going to be trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see. At the end of a business cycle, at the end of a credit cycle, as far as my analysis is concerned, there's no hard and fast law that business cycles have to only last 7, 8, 9, 10 years and then they go down. No. I mean, this thing can continue, but my analysis says otherwise, and that's what I'm here to give you, my opinion, my analysis. So what does this mean, ladies and gentlemen, is if we do fall into recession, and recessions have not been outlawed, and it doesn't even have to be a big doozy. It could just be your standard run-of-the-mill recession. Deficits could go up 100%. They're about $1 trillion now. They could be $2 trillion like nothing. $2.5, $3 trillion. Now, that would be a doozy. If we had $3 trillion deficits, call the game, that's it. Game, set, match, it's over. But the reason I would have to think that Admiral Mike Mullen said the number one threat to our national security is our national debt is because if there's no economy, there's nothing to sustain this country. There's nothing to sustain the military-industrial complex. There's nothing that can provide for a military. And who knows what type of political divisiveness would exist within this country. You think it's bad now, wait till you have another recession. Even if it's run-of-the-mill, it ain't going to be pretty. If it's like 08, 09, hang on to your hat. If it's worse, you better be prepared. So this is an honest question. And what is the President of the United States doing about this? Oh, right, that's right, nothing. What are the Republicans in Congress, these fiscal conservatives, doing in Congress about this? Oh, that's right, nothing. What are the Democrats doing? What they typically do? Nothing. They don't care about the national debt. You got these lunatics on stage talking about everything's going to be free. You know how expensive that is going to be? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. We can't afford to go to war. If for anything else, I mean, my God, if people can't understand the humanity behind it, of sending somebody else to go fight for I don't even know what, but if you can't do it for that reason, what about the financial and economic impact of it? Because you have to remember, ladies and gentlemen, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I'm only in my early 30s and I remember this. But you had Osama bin Laden saying, look, we would never beat the United States of America on their own soil. We have to get them over here. We have to keep them over here. And we have to be patient until we outrun the patience of patience. And we have to drain them dry. One hell of a strategy, because it seems to be working. And this leads me to another thing I want to discuss. Food for thought here. Because yesterday evening, President Trump was interviewed by Tucker Carlson. Now, this took place over the weekend. It was taped when he was over there in South Korea. And there might have been part two aired tonight. I don't know. I didn't catch it. But I caught some of the interview last night. Again, President Trump being interviewed by Tucker Carlson of Fox News. And one of the comments made by President Trump caught me, because It's something that I've heard before. I don't know if it's come out of the president's mouth, but I've definitely heard it from other people. And what he said was to Tucker Carlson, who tends to be somewhat more Republican-libertarian, pretty much anti-war, no nation building, no empire building, that type of thing. President Trump was like, you know, I pretty much agree with you, Tucker, on a lot of that stuff. Because the question came about of, you know, are you, Mr. President, going to remove the troops out of Afghanistan and other places around the world? And President Trump, I would love to bring them home all immediately, yada, yada, yada. But you know what? When you have very qualified, very respected, very tough generals that you're talking with, and you bring this up, and they say, sir, we're going to do whatever you order. But our opinion, our analysis is we would rather fight them there than here. I understand that statement. It's a hard and fast statement. And I get it. But here's the question. Here's the food for thought. We're spending several hundred billion dollars per year on national defense. And then tack on to that a whole bunch of other money for other security and intelligence gathering services, whether that's with the CIA, whether that's with the FBI. I mean, there is an entire apparatus that is receiving hundreds of billions of dollars a year, plus the war machine, plus all these places that we are in. Where's it going? Is every dollar accounted for? I highly doubt it. We know that it isn't. And we talk about that in the Cynic's Guide to Investing. And all you have to do is a Google search of that, look up the Defense Department, missing money, your head will spin. So there's no accountability. There's no end in sight to a lot of these conflicts or wars, whatever you want to call them. We were told formally by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff that our national debt is our biggest security threat. We have nobody at the helm who seems to care, and it's getting worse. So my question is this. If instead we spent that money, let's just say for the sake of argument, we keep spending that same amount of money, but we bring all of these soldiers home, all of these airmen home, all of these Marines home from wherever in the world they are, and we put them along the West Coast, and we put them along the southern border, and we put them along the East Coast from Maine to Florida and across the northern border. Because you have to look and you have to think about this rationally here, folks. What is the United States of America? We're a country that has the Pacific Ocean out west. We have the Atlantic Ocean out east. We have friendly neighbors to the north in Canada. And while there are many issues with our southern border, Mexico is no military threat, and neither is any major other country within Latin America or even South America for that reason. So who's going to attack us? How are they going to get here is my question. Because instead of spending all of this money on war and spending a whole bunch of U.S. dollars in other countries benefiting their GDP and their local economies, why don't you bring all of these soldiers, sailors, and Marines back home to defend our borders? How the hell is anybody going to get in here? Because if you spend all this money patrolling our seas, patrolling our borders, investing that money in the best technology that money can buy, and we do this, or at least we better if we're going to spend that kind of money, on technological advancements when it comes to sonar, when it comes to radar, when it comes to satellite imagery, who the hell is going to get in here to any degree where it's really a threat? Because once you're in here, you're going to have a lot of Americans. If they get in here, you're going to have a lot of Americans who are already armed to the hilt as it is. And they will fight for this country. So you would have to be crazy, crazy, if you're some sort of standing army to try to get into the United States of America. Your supply chain is going to be thousands of miles away. Thousands of miles away. And one of our biggest threats now that we're saying that we're fighting is terrorism. So terrorists. What Air Force, what Navy does Al-Qaeda have? And if they did, how good of pilots or admirals do you think they would be? I mean, this is a serious question. I understand the tough guy talk. Well, we'd rather fight them over there than here. I get it. But why don't you think rationally? Why don't you bring those soldiers, sailors, and Marines back home where they belong with their families, put them on the border, defend this country like they're supposed to, let Germany defend the Germans, let the Japanese defend Japan, and round we go. We are not the policemen of the world. Nowhere is that stated in our Constitution. And it's our Constitution. That's where we're supposed to take our marching orders. We're not supposed to build empire. We're not supposed to be the police force of the world. No. Not even close. We don't have the money, and it's not our business. Somebody wants to trade, talk, and travel with the United States? Absolutely, let's do it. Peace and prosperity. But that's how you do it. You lead by example. You don't do it by force, looking down the barrel of an M16 or an Abrams tank or an F-22 stealth fighter, which, by the way, we've just sent over to the Middle East. Further escalation on our part. We're getting ready. Something's coming. I told you, you don't just do this for the hell of it. You put more resources in that region, you increase the likelihood that something bad is going to happen. Let us all pray that that doesn't happen. Is war inevitable? Think about it. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.